Allah
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 It's the third from the bottom.
All right, so we'll say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Ayin Tes. It's the sugar. Ayin Tes, yes. But we left off on Ayin Ches Amud Beis. If you remember, again, we left off. Actually, I have a little bit to do today. So we left off Amar Abaye, which is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 lines up from the bottom. So we'll say, if you remember again, the Gemara left off yesterday by discussing the idea that anything that is necessary for the development of a child, one is permitted, a minor child, one is permitted to do for them on Yom Kippur. So of course, again, giving them to eat, giving them to drink. Again, it was assumed that times of Chazal anointing them with oil. Anything necessary for their own physical maturation and well-being, you're permitted to do. Additional things that are not necessary for their physical maturation, one should abstain from Yom Kippur. The only example of that the Gemara gave was wearing of shoes. And therefore, again, halacha l'maaseh, we wouldn't have a katan, we wouldn't have a young child wear leather shoes on Yom Kippur. So now once the Gemara brought up this discussion about what to do for the maturation of a child, the Gemara says something very interesting. And this is actually a very profound Gemara. Damra Abaye said, Amrili aim, my mother told me, Revise diyunuka, the proper way to nurture a young child as a baby, Maya chamimi, you have to bathe the baby in warm water, umishcha, and anoint the baby with oil, right? Shmir oil on the baby. Gadol, when the child gets a little bit older, what's important? Gadol porta, child gets a little bit bigger. Bi'asa b'kuscha, what does the child need for its basic nutritional needs? Eggs and kusach. Remember, kusach is this dish made of curdled milk, moldy bread. It's an acquired taste. It's an acquired taste. Right? In any event, so what does a child need for its own? Again, an egg and kusach. Gadol porta, cereal, right? Listen to this. Child gets a little bit older. What do you need? What do you need to give the child? Tavure money. You have to go ahead and give the child utensils to break. Now, what does that mean? Look at Rashi. It says it's quite profound. Tavuri money, lahafkir lo kelim l'shaber. You should give a child some utensils to break. Why? Ulamatlos ta'avoso. In order for him to fulfill his desires. So, what was Abaye's mother telling him? Children need an outlet. Children need an outlet. One of the greatest parenting mistakes that parents make is they try to get their kids to grow up a little bit too fast. That's why, again, I think it's a terrible, this is just a sideline commentary. I just happen to think it's a terrible thing, you know, that we begin to like get our children focused. What are you going to be? What are you going to do? What do you want to do? Hey, there's a certain concept of being a child. And being a child means being a child and not worrying about what the future is going to hold. They're not worried about if you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant. You're old enough to think about those things. In fact, I think you should start paying part of the mortgage. So the idea over here is that Abaye's mother said to him that, again, you have to give the child an outlet. Okay, their outlet was letting the kids break things. I guess this was before the punching bag. Whatever it is, to give. Say what happened. Ki daha de rabba, so the Gemara said like rabba, zabin luhu money de gizi de parcha libnei umetabin luhu. Like rabba used to go ahead and purchase for his child, literally, gizi deparcha libnei. He would go ahead and purchase. Rashi says gizi deparcha is kelim sedukim shel cheres bedamim kalim. These were cracked earthenware utensils that were cheap. So he gave his kids something to play with, and if his kid broke them, it wouldn't be a big deal. Fine. Now the Gemara goes back. Amalech va'kala yirchatzu esmeim. So remember again, the Mishnah said that although washing is one of the prohibitions on Yom Kippur, the melech, the king, as well as a kala, a bride, are permitted to wash their face on Yom Kippur. The Gemara says, Masnisin money, whose opinion does our Mishnah reflect? Rabbi Chanina ben Trajon, Disanya, Hamelech v'akala lo yichetzu es peneim, because the Gemara quotes the Braisa, and the first opinion of the Braisa says that even neither a king nor a bride may wash their face on Yom Kippur. However, Rabbi Chanina ben Trajon, Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Hamelech v'akala yichetzu es peneim, Rabbi Chanina ben Trajon says, name Rabbi Eliezer, that no, a king and a bride may wash their face on Yom Kippur. Similarly, hachaya lo tina les asandal. We'll say a chaya is a woman who has given birth. Now, generally, halachically, when we speak about a chaya is usually a woman within 30 days after childbirth. Understand that obviously things today, Baruch Hashem, are very different. A woman was considered to be in an active state of sakana for up to a month after having given birth. Also, just to understand, as an aside, you know, we have a minhag today to add an additional candle. When a woman gives birth, the minhag is that she adds an additional candle for every child that's born. So where does that minhag come from? So the origin of that minhag is, you know, the halacha is that if a woman misses one week of lighting Shabbos candles, there's a knas, there's a penalty, in order that she shouldn't forget again, and she has to add an additional candle. It used to be historically when women gave birth, they would not be out of bed that first Shabbos. Inevitably, they missed Hadlokas Neros that first Shabbos after giving birth. And so on the subsequent Shabbosos, they would add an additional candle. That evolved into a minhag to light an additional candle for every child born. Just interesting. So I'm just pointing that out to you so you should see this idea that a chaya woman after giving birth, woman was in a serious state. So therefore, again, but how the Rashi says that even a chaya is not permitted to wear leather shoes. Rabbi Chanina ben Trajan says, no, Mishum Rabbi Elazar, ha chaya tina las asandals. So also Rabbi Chanina ben Trajan says in the case of the king and the kala that they can wash, as well as in the case of the chaya, that she may wear a shoe even on Yom Kippur. My time up. So what's the reason? Meaning, Abba said, why is Rabbi Chanina ben Trajan, really Rabbi Eliezer, why is he meka? Why is he lenient with the king and the bride? So the Gemara says, my time up. Melech, mishum dechsev, melech biyofyov techazeno einecho. Because the Pasuk says, it's quoting over here, the Pasuk that says the following, that a king, literally from Yeshayo, that the king shall be seen in, literally, you will see him with his eyes in his full beauty, in his full glory. So the idea is that the king always has to present himself in a regal, monarchical type of way. We'll say it's interesting. That's why the Rambam paskins that how often did the king get his hair cut? King got his hair cut every day. Every day. I guess whatever, a little, even if it's more symbolic, the king had to be in a constant state of beauty. Because again, he had to command the respect of the general populace. So Rabbi Chanina ben Trajan says he washes his face even on Yom Kippur. Kala mai taimo. What about the kala? Why does the kala wash her face on Yom Kippur or wash on Yom Kippur? Kadesh lo tiskana abaylo. In order that she not become repulsive to her husband. The idea, we see this expressed in many different places in halacha, that Chazal placed an incredible emphasis on making sure that a new bride is always attractive and beautiful in the eyes of her husband. The idea is that that creates the appropriate foundation for the marriage. So they get married a couple days before Yom Kippur, and suddenly he sees her, you know, without makeup, without that. Okay, I'm not going to go on with that. So the Gemara says the following: Amarle Rav Rav Chia, Kala Ad Kama. And how long is a woman considered a kala? So also, of course, the correct answer to this question is forever, right? Good. So, okay, so that's the marriage answer. Now, what about the halachic answer? How long is a woman considered to be a kala for? Amarle ki disanya ein monin tach shitin min hakala kol shloshim yom. So I'll say, because the Gemara quotes a brisa from elsewhere, literally, we do not hold back cosmetics from the kala all 30 days. I will say, look at Rashi for just a moment. This is expressed in a totally different context. It's actually a very interesting case. Rashi says, Braisahi, umay sinan, it's Rashi de Ramaskal in Monin Takshitin, Braisahi, umay sinan la beresh besulanises pixubus. Hari shahayat tivcho tavuach, vieno mazuk, umes aviv shal chasan o ima shal kala. I will say, the Gemara Maseches Ksubis is the following case. Let's say you're ready to have a wedding, and Nebuch, you know, let's call it the mother of the kala passes away. But everything is ready to go. And the mamash ready for the way. So what do we do? Machnisin es hameis lecheder, v'es hachosan v'hakala l'chupa. So we go and literally we put the mace in a room, which means we do not do the levaya now. We put the mace somewhere else. We go on with the wedding. We bring the chosan and kala to the chupa. Boel bi'ilas mitzvah. We allow them to spend their wedding night together. Uporesh v'achar kach kovernes hameis. Then they separate, and then ultimately, then we do the levaya. And what happens? Ve'in monin tachshitim l'akala machmas ha'evil kol shloshim yom. But I will say the interesting part in this over here is that even though after this, after the wedding, the kala is a machlokes in the Gemara, by the way, as to when Shiva itself actually begins. Does Shiva begin immediately after the chuppah, meaning immediately after the burial, or is Shiva deferred until after Sheva Brachos? So that we'll get to those sugyas. But the point the Gemara is making over here is that the Kala is permitted to go ahead and put on her makeup all 30 days, even throughout Shloshim. So therefore, the Gemara assumes that the status, the halachic status of Kala, stays with the bride for 30 days. So therefore, this dispensation for a Kala to wash on Yom Kippur would apply to a woman who was married within 30 days before Yom Kippur. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, what about Hachaya Tinalas Asandal? What about that the woman who gave birth could go ahead and wear shoes? So the Gemara says, Mishum Tzino. That's ultimately because of cold, because she's especially sensitive to the cold. And therefore, again, we don't want her to compromise her health. Therefore, we allow her to wear the shoes. Amar Shmuel, Imachmas Asakanas Akrav Mutar. Shmuel says, if you live in a place where there is scorpions, then Lamaisa, everyone is permitted to wear shoes. Now, we'll say, the Rishonim ask on this, why does Shmuel have to say this? Obviously, if you live in a place where there's a danger of scorpions, that's Sakonas Nefashos, right? That's mortal danger. And of course, when it comes to mortal danger, you could do whatever you need. Okay, folks can answer in their own way. So if a person goes ahead, remember again, the Mishnah said that the shear for consumption was the size of a large date. The size of a large date. So the Gemara says the following. Boi Rav Papa. Now, obviously, what jumps out about this to begin with is that normally we're going to speak about Shi'urim for Achila. So Shi'urim for Achila, measurements for any kind of consumption-related prohibitions are normally what? A kizayis, an olive's vine. So it's interesting over here that the Gemara calls it the size of a large date. So Boi Rav Papa. Rav Papa asks the following kasha. Tapa Vayintes. Ki koseves sha'amru. This koseves. Now, here's what we know. Let's go on. Kosev Shamru, this date that we spoke about, bigarinosa or below garinosa, is the volume. Obviously, this is a volume measure. So, it's okay. Good. So, it is a volume measure. I'm sorry. We're still recording. It's amazing. See? Yeah. So it is. Okay. Good. We'll go back to it. It's all right. We've got coffee and Ruglach. Everything's in there. No one panic. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, so the Kshayla is this large date. Is the volume of the date measured together with its pit or without its pit? Boy Ravashi. So this was Rav Papa's Kasha. So all we know is the size of a large date. What does the size of a large date mean? Is the size of a large date? Now the computer went off. Okay, fine. So what's the size of a large date? Is the size of a large date ultimately with its pit or without its pit? So the Gemara says, Boi Ravashi. Ravashi asked the following kasha. Etzem kisaora. So that was Rav Papa's kasha. Ravashi asks, when we say etzem kisaora, now what does etzem kisaora mean? Etzem kisaora means, the halacha is that a bone fragment, the size of a barley kernel, ultimately is conveys tuma. So the shayla is etzem kisora biklipasa, is that a barley kernel in its husk, or below klipasa, or without its husk, bilacha, is it a moist barley kernel, or biyevesha, or a dried one. So Ravashi lomi boy lehadrabasa. Well, so here's what's interesting. Ravashi did not have Rav Papa's kasha. So Rav Papa wanted to know the large date of Yom Kippur. Does that include the pit or doesn't it include the pit? So Ravashi was bothered by the barley kernel. I should say the grain kernel. Is it a barley kernel? So Ravashi didn't have the kasher of Papa. Why not? Gasa itmar kol kamada gasa. Because what does the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says that the size for the consumption of Yom Kippur is koseves hagasa. Koseves hagasa means what? A large date. How do you get to the shear of a large date? The assumption automatically is that includes the size or the volume of the pit as well. Rav Papa lomi boy lehad Ravashi. Rav Papa did not have Ravashi's kasha. Remember, what was Ravashi's kasha? Ravashi's kasha was about the barley kernel. Why not? Because he says, lacha, if you're talking about a moist barley kernel, shibolis mikri, that's called a shibolis. Shalobi klipasa, and if it doesn't have its shell, that's called an ushla. Mikri, and therefore again, Rav Papa understood that the barley kernel shear must be talking about what? A dry one with its kernel, with its husk. Okay, so the Gemara goes back to now that the Gemara introduced this, Amar Rava, Amar Rav Yehuda, Koseves Hagasa Sha'amru, Yisera Mikabetz. And I will say, here's what's interesting. Now, it would appear that the shear for Yom Kippur is certainly larger than a Kizayis, right? Must be larger than a Kizayis, because if it wasn't larger than a Kizayis, Kizayis is always the default measurement for any type of prohibitions concerning consumption. So it must be larger than a Kizayis. The Gemara now says, however, what about Mikabetza? Is it larger than the volume of an egg? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Huda says that a Koseves Kasa, a large date, is larger than the size of an egg. V'kimlohu l'rabbanon, and the rabbis established, d'bahachi miyasva daite. The rabbis say, why would the shear of consumption of Yom Kippur be a larger amount than a general shear for prohibited consumption? So the Gemara says, because remember, rabbis say, remember, for Yom Kippur, what's the operative word that's used? Inui, affliction, right? The Torah doesn't just simply say you can't eat, right? The Torah speaks about affliction. The Gemara understands, therefore, that affliction is a higher threshold. So the Gemara says, so now let's read this again. Amar Yehuda, Koseves Hagasa Sha'amru. When we speak about the size of a large date, that must be larger than an egg. V'kim luhu l'rabbanon, and the rabbis establish, de'bahachi miyasva daite. That this larger amount, this is the amount that settles the mind of man. Now, what does that mean? But sirmihachi, less than this, lo miyasva daite, does not give a person a certain yishuv hadas, a certain, we'll call it, inner quietude. Now, look at Rashi. Kimlu l'rabbanon, va'af agav dekol shir achilas isra b'kizayis hi, even though normally we say that when there's an isra achila, when there's a prohibition to eat something, the shir, the amount is a kizayis, hani mili, Hecha diksive achila. That's when the Torah phrases the prohibition as a consumption. However, aval hocha asher lo suneksiv the chokama delo miyasva daite inoihu. The Rabbi said, when the Torah speaks about affliction over here, so affliction refers to a feeling of not being settled. The Gemara understands over here that that is a larger amount than a kezias. Yes, a kezias is the most basic unit to qualify as a halachic act of eating. Anything less than a kezias is not called halachic eating. But that amount of eating does not what? Does not in any way satisfy the individual. Therefore, by Yom Kippur, when it phrases the prohibition as affliction, therefore the prohibition devolves upon what? An act of eating that would have the ability to what? To remedy affliction. What's the amount of food necessary to remedy affliction? The Gemara says, an amount of food that has the ability to satisfy, which is larger than a kizayis, which is therefore what? Kikoseves hagasa, which must be the size of an egg. So the Gemara says,
why would they not just go straight to
the egg? Oh, so we'll see. Excellent. We're going to see that in just a moment. Excellent. So we're going to see that. The Gemara doesn't answer that question now. So we'll say, but what the Gemara did just do for us is the following. Seemed to indicate to us that the Koseves Hagasa, this large date, is larger than the shear of an egg. So the Gemara now is going to question that. Meisvei. The Gemara is the Kasha. We'll say this is by Sukkah. So the Gemara says, Maisa. There was an episode, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Litom es Atavshel. They brought a food item to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to eat. Or Rabbi Gamliel, and for Rabbi Gamliel, they brought him Shtei Kosavos v'dli Shamayim. They brought him two dates and a bucket of water. Va'amru, and the two rabbis said, Ha'elum l'sukkah, bring our food to the sukkah. V'tani alot, and we comment about that, Lo mipnei shalocha kach. It's not because they had to eat these items in the sukkah. Ela sheratzu lahachmir al atzman. So, but why did they ask their attendants to bring the food to the sukkah? They were machmir on themselves. Okay. So the Gemara says the following. But yet when they gave Rabbi Tzadok ochel pachos mikabeitza. Rabbi, so listen to this. Just keep this in mind. So don't worry about as much about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, but keep in mind Rabbi Gamliel. What did they mean, Rabbi Gamliel? Two dates and a bucket of water. All right? And he said, bring it up to the sukkah, even though what? You don't have to eat it in the sukkah. Rabbi Tzadok, what did they bring Rabbi Tzadok? Ochel pachos mikabeitza. They brought him food that was less than a kabeitza, less than the volume of an egg. And what did he do? Not lo b'mapa. Number one is he took it in a cloth. We'll discuss in just a moment. But achlo chutz l'sukkah, and he ate it outside of the sukkah. And he did not bench afterwards. Now, Rabbi, look at Rashi. Last Rashi on the daf before we turn the page. Rabbi Tzadok was lenient in three areas. Number one, Rabbi, now what's happening over here, by the way, is they brought him, this must have been a pachos mikabetza of bread, right? Less than an egg's volume of bread. And Rabbi Tzadok had three leniencies with bread less than the volume of an egg. Number one, is that he didn't wash. He didn't wash for it. That's like, what does the Braisa say? What did he do? He went ahead and he wrapped it in a piece of, in a cloth. So his hands would not come in direct contact with the bread. He didn't wash over it. That's number one. Number two, El Mapakar Chedav, Mishum Anino Sadas, V'chutz L'Sukkah. Number two, second leniency is, he ate it outside of the sukkah. And number three, he didn't bench. The Rabbi said, interestingly enough, the only reason he wrapped the bread in a cloth, Rashi says, is Mishum Aninos Hadas. Aninos Hadas means he was a fastidious person that probably did not like eating with his hands or didn't like touching his food with his hands. So he wrapped his food, not for a halachic reason, but because he didn't want to touch the bread directly. But he held that bread less than a kabeitza did not require washing. So again, don't confuse this with another concept that says that if you're in a situation where you can't wash your hands, one of the ways that you can circumvent the obligation to wash your hands is not to touch the bread directly, right? To hold. That's why sometimes if a person is traveling and doesn't have access to water, that's one of the things you could do if you can't wash. You still make hamotzi and you still bench afterwards. That's not what's happening over here. The kula is that he didn't wash. That's the kula. The kula is that he held that bread less than a kabeitza, you don't have to wash for. The only reason he wrapped it in something is because of his own fastidious nature. That's kula one. Kula two is that he didn't eat in the sukkah. Kula three is that he did not bench afterwards. I both say, we don't really care about this. We only care about this for one reason. Take a look at our days. Ha, they both say, what is he eating? He's eating less than a kabeitza. What can we infer from here? Ha kabeitza by sukkah. Oh, so what can we infer? The only reason he has these kulas is why? Because he was eating less than a kibbetza. But if he was eating a kibbetza, then what? Then he would require a sukkah. Now look at this, Rabbosai. Look at Rashi says, ha kibbetza ba'i sukkah. Before we look at Rashi, let's analyze this ourselves. Here's what we have. Rabbi Tzadok is eating outside of the sukkah, and he's not washing, and he's not benching, but only because he's eating less than a kibbetza. If you were to eat a kibbetza mount, then what would be the halacha? He'd have to eat it in the sukkah. Now, remember, what did we just say before? Rabbi Gamliel got two dates, right? He was given two dates. And what happens? Where did he eat those? Outside of the sukkah. So what do we just learn from this? That two dates is less than the size of a kibbetza. So obviously now we have a contradiction. Because what did Rabbi Huda just say before? That koseves gasa, that a large date, is larger than the size of an egg, of a kibbetza. And yet what do we see from this braisa? That two dates seem to be smaller than a kibbetza. Look at Rashi. Ha kibbetza boi sukkah. Alma, what do we see from here? Shteko savos, the Amrin La'el, the two dates that we mentioned above. Obviously, it's not like we said before, and therefore it would appear that dates, and this is two dates, are smaller than the egg's volume. So the Gemara now spells out the kasha. And if you want to say, like we said above, that the koseves hagasa, the large date, is larger than a kibbetza, like Rabbi Huda said before, hashta, shtei kosavos lo garin, lo havi kibbetza, koseves hagasa ugarinasa mi havi yisira mi kibbetza. Then I will say, granted, if you want to say that the two dates that Rabbi Gamliel were given were pitted, right? They didn't have pits. But if you're going to tell me that two dates without their pits are smaller than the size of the beitza, can it be? Then certainly what? Certainly one date, even with its pit, is going to be smaller than the size of the beitza. To which the Gemara says, no. Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, in shtei kosavos below garinasan, lo havi kebeitza. Rabbi Yirmiya says, you're right. Two pitted dates are not the size of a beitza. However, koseves hagasa vegarinasa, havi yisira mika beitza. But yes, a large date with its pit is in fact what? Is in fact larger than the beitza. So also what Rav Yirmiya is actually answering over here is it's not a contradiction. two pitted dates. We're going to see that the date, the pit itself has a lot, occupies a lot of the space of the date itself. So two pitted dates, yes, will be less than the size of a beitza, but one large date with its pit will be larger. Amar Rapapa, Rapapa says, Hainu da'amri inshi. This is what people normally say. Tre kavi de tamri. If you buy two kav, we'll say kav is a measurement, the volume measurement. If you buy two kav of dates, just be prepared. Chad kava de kashiyasa visariach. One and a little bit of that kav will be what? Will be refuse, right? Will be the pits. Will be the pits. So what do you see from here? That the pits actually make up a little bit more than 50% of the volume of the date. Therefore, says Rabbi Yirmiyahu Lamaisa, yes, if you have two pitted dates, those could actually, those two together can be smaller than the beitza, but one large date with its pit can be larger than the size of the beitza.
Sevis Gasa that the Gemara referred to, the Gasa part was entirely attributable to the pitch?
No.
Or no, it was also a large
We're going to get to that in just a moment. It's actually, what Gemara is going to say is it's actually a larger date. Because obviously in dates themselves, not all dates are the same size. Rava, I'm sorry.
Not dried dates.
I mean, not dried dates, correct. These are fresh dates. Mm-hmm. Fresh dates. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara says, Rava, Amar Rava says like this. Hasu, now again, Rava said, we're commenting back on the Braisa from Sukkah. So Rava says there's another reason. Hasam hainu taimo mishum dahavalu peri. There's another reason why ultimately, again, why they weren't obligated, why Rabbi Gamliel did not have to take the two dates up to the Sukkah, and that's why. Because it's fruit, uperi lo ba'u sukkah, and fruit doesn't require a sukkah. I mean, I will say the whole kasha the Gemara raised was the fact like this: Rabbi Tzadok is eating his bread out of the sukkah because it's less than the size of a beitza. But if it was the size of the beitza, he'd be obligated to go to the sukkah. But Rabbi Gamliel ate his date outside of the sukkah also, and yet those were two dates. So the Gemara said, you see from here that what? That two dates. Are smaller than a beitza. So the Gemara's first answer is yes, two pitted dates are less than the size of a beitza, but one date with its pit is as large of a beitza. Rava comes along and says, I don't understand why you guys are even getting into this. It's not a kasha. It could be that two dates are larger than a beitza. So why isn't Rabbi Gamliel taking it up to the sukkah? And the answer is because it's fruit. Right, so like, why are you getting into a whole discussion more than a kibetza, less than a kibetza? It could be 57 times the size of a beitza. It's fruit, and fruit doesn't have to be eaten in the sukkah. So I'll say, now this is very exciting because now we're going on a couple of tangents. The Gemara says, really? Fruit doesn't require a sukkah? So I'll say again, just don't lose sight. Keep your eye on the ball here, right? Because we're going to go on a couple of tangents. Remember, keep your eye on the date. All right, time. Right, that might be good etiquette in general. All right, good. So now, as long as it's your date, right? So the Gemara says the following. So now we're trying to figure out over here. We're trying to be focused on the fact that the Mishnah gave us a shear for consumption on Yom Kippur. And that shear was called Seves Hagasa, a large date. The difficulty we have with it is we don't know where that falls out on the halachic spectrum of shiurim. One thing we know for sure is what? Is what? That it's larger than a kizayis. That we know, because if it wasn't larger than a kizayis, say a kizayis, and there's no such thing in halacha as less than a kizayis. So it's got to be larger than a kizayis. The question is, what's its relationship to a beitza, to an eggs? Rabbi Yehuda said on Amud Aleph that it's larger than a beitza. We brought up this brisa from Sukkah, to try to contradict that. The Gemara the other day says, Rav says it's not a contradiction. Why? Because literally, you can't bring a riot for the relationship between the kibetza of, or the less than a kibetza of Rabbi Tzadok and the two dates of Rabbi Gamliel, because Rabbi Gamliel didn't have to go into the sukkah because it was fruit. Now that we mentioned that, the Gemara says, really? You don't have to eat fruit in the sukkah? Meisve. Amar Rabbi said, Kishahayinu lomdin Torah eitzo Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua. When we were learning Torah by Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua, Heviu lifaninu te'inu ba'anavim, bless you. He brought before us figs and grapes. Va'achalnum achilas arai chutz l'sukkah. So I'll say, and Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua says, excuse me, this is Rebbe saying that when we were learning to Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua, he brought us all kinds of fruit, right? Figs and grapes. And we ate it achilas arai. Achilas arai means what, Rabbi Osai? A snack. A non-set meal. And we ate that outside of the sukkah because it was achilas arai. So the Gemara says, achilas arai in achilas keva lo. Now, what can you see from that statement? Why did they eat the fruit out of the sukkah? only because it was achilas arai, which seems to indicate that what? That if they were going to make a meal of fruit, then what? Then they would be obligated to eat that in the sukkah. That contradicts what we just said before, because Rebbe wanted to say before that you never have to eat fruit in the sukkah. To which the Gemara says, no, no, no. Say that we ate it like a snack outside of the sukkah. Meaning Rabbo said that, that Lamaisa again, what Rebbe was saying was that whenever you eat fruit, fruit is always achilas arai. Meaning even if you go ahead and you decide to make a meal of fruit, halachically, even achilas keva of fruit is always considered like an achilas arai, and therefore does not require a sukkah. Ibai, same as second possibility is, achalnum achilas keva, v'achalnum pas achilas arai ba'adayu. Oh, or the second possibility is what? The fruit, we ate a lot of fruit, like achilas keva. But we didn't eat the fruit alone. What else did we eat?
Bread.
We ate bread. But the bread, or mizonos for that matter, could be bread or grain items. We ate as an achilas arai. We had only a snack. And therefore, because the mizonos, because the grain-based item was not consumed as an achilas keva, as a set meal, but only as a snack, and because fruit in general is always considered to be what? Achilas arai. Therefore, again, we were able to eat out of the sukkah. So the Gemara goes, Vaitel. So let's say that this supports the following. So the Gemara says, "Lefichach." Therefore, im hishlim b'minei targima yatsa. I will say, what is this talking about over here? Look at Rashi. Im hishlim yud dalit suudos sha'adam chayiv le'echol b'sukkah. The David Rabbi Eliezer b'maseches sukkah. So I will say, remember this because our next masech and dafyomi is sukkah. So we will see. There's an opinion of Rabbi Eliezer who holds that over sukkahs you must eat 14 meals in the sukkah. It's a very interesting sheet that Rabbi Elazar holds that the mitzvah of Suda doesn't is not just on Yom Tov itself, but is on Chol HaMoed as well. Therefore, you have to have 14 meals in the sukkah. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, Lefichach im hishlem b'minei targima. If you completed your obligation for 14 meals with minei targima. Now, what are minei targima? Look at Rashi. Rashi says lifton. So lifton normally means condiments. So what this means is the following. This is non-grain items. Minei targima is any non-grain item. It could be meat, it could be fish, it could be fruit, it could be vegetables, anything that's not grain-based. So the Gemara says that according to Rabbi Eliezer, I take that back. It doesn't really refer to fruit, right? What it really refers to is anything that's not grain-based, meat, fish, chicken, vegetables. So you see from here, Rabbi Eliezer says that you could finish off your obligation for 14 meals, even without mizonos, even without bread, just mini targima. So Gemara says, well, 1 second. And if you would think that fruit requires a sukkah, listen, peros, why don't you say that you could finish off your obligation for your 14 meals over sukkahs with what? With fruit salad. Right? You could eat your fruit for a meal and you could go ahead and finish, use that as a meal also. So the Gemara says, my mini targima, well, maybe what does mini targima mean? Peros. Maybe mini targima actually means fruit as well. And therefore, what is the Brisa saying? That you can use a meal of fruit to satisfy your meal requirements on sukkah, which of course would seem to indicate that lamaisa what? That lamaisa, that fruit would require a sukkah. V'bayisema, ba'asra delo shchichi peri. And the only reason why they use the phrase mini targima as opposed to peros is why? Because maybe it was being stated in a locale where they didn't have fruit. So also remember, the concept of access to fresh fruit on a continuous basis is a new phenomenon that we have. This was not something that people throughout the centuries enjoyed. So it could be that even if they meant fruit, they didn't say fruit. Okay, fine. Sigmar Sviba is Aslo Shriki Peri. Rav Zvid, so we'll say the Gemara stops that discussion over here. So we'll say what comes out over here is the whole sukkah discussion was only introduced in order to help us, in order to help actually to raise a kasha, to raise a contradiction against the position of Rav Yehuda, who said that the large date is larger than the beitza. The Gemara failed in that attempt. The Gemara Masechta Sukkah was not a good kasha. Once we started talking about sukkah, so it opened up a whole new discussion. Now we're going to bring that discussion to a close. I will tell you, Halacha L'maaseh from sukkah, we are not obligated to eat fruit in the sukkah, even if you are koveya su'uda. even if you decide that you are going to have a meal of fruit, bless you. Your meal is going to be fruit, you are still, bless you. You are not obligated to eat that in the sukkah. That is halacha l'maaseh. Also, that being said, of course, the halacha says that you should try to eat everything in the sukkah. So obviously, the lechatchila is we try to do everything in the sukkah. But b'di'eved, it's not even real b'di'eved. If a person can't achieve that lechatchila, one is not obligated even for kviyas sulas peros in the sukkah. The Gemara goes back there. Rav Zvid says, koseves hagasa sha'amru chaseira mikabeitza. So also I say now, Rav Zvid says, well, no, just the opposite of Rav Yehuda. That the large date is actually less than the shear of a beitza. Less than the shear of the beitza. So the Gemara says, this nan we learned. Beishamai says, so'or bekezayis, v'chameis bekosebes. So Beishamai says that the shear for so'or is a kezayis, and for chametz is a kosebes, the size of a date. I will say, these two concepts are different. So'or, we normally translate as leaven. So'or is an item, of course, that is chametz, but also has the ability to make something else chametz. So for example, yeast, sourdough. So something that itself is chametz and also has the ability to make something else chametz. So we'll say, when the Gemara talks about the shear over here, this is talking about the shear, not necessarily for consumption, because the person is not going to eat yeast, the person is not going to eat sourdough. This is for b'al-yiro'e b'al-yimotze. Bless you. That there is a halacha, there's a prohibition on Pesach to own chametz. To own chametz, and by extension, to see the chametz that you own. So obviously, in order to be in violation of this iser, you have to have chametz of a certain shear. What is the shear for bayira bayimatzah? So the Beis Shammai says two different shiurim. For sa'ar, it's a kizayis. It's the size of an egg. For chametz of osai is anything else that's chametz. Bikosev is the size of a large date. So, or I should say the size of a date. V'havinan ba. And we ask about this. My time in the Beis Shammai. Now, Rabbi Osai, why does Beis Shammai have two different shiurim for chametz and for sa'ar? We would think, again, chametz is chametz. Mm-hmm. Let there be one shiur. Why are there two shiurim? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. It says Beis Shammai, nichtov rachmana chametz, velo bayi sa'ar. Rabbi Osai, here's what's interesting. The Torah speaks about the prohibition of chametz in two different ways. It speaks about kol machmetzes, right, which means chametz, and it speaks about kol sa'ar. So it mentions both. So Moses says, why do you have to mention both? After all, let it just say, lichtov rachmana chametz, let the Torah just state the prohibition by chametz, v'lo bayi sa'ar, and I don't need another prohibition by sa'ar, and I would have said the following, but I would have said, uma chametz she'ein chimutzo kosher, when it comes to chametz, literally, whose leavening is not kosher, is not hard. And Moses says, what does that mean, whose leavening is not kosher? Mm-hmm. That means, it doesn't have the ability to make something else chametz. Asra b'kizayis, and yet it's asra b'kizayis. Sa'ar shechimutzo kashal kol shekein. Then all the more so, sa'ar b'osai, which what? Which does have the ability to make something else chametz. Then what? Then certainly its shear should be a kizayis. And so what Beis Shammai is saying is, all you need to do is state one. Just state the prohibition of bayira bayimotzeh by chametz. And if we would have said that by chametz there's an isra kizayis, so I would have automatically assumed that by sa'ar there's that same shear as well. But what happened? But the Gemara says midim mifliginhu rachmana. The fact that the Torah states both of them sa'ar and chametz, what does that teach us? Limda lecha, that teaches us shi'uro shelzeh lo kishi'uro shelzeh. That teaches what Rabbi Osai, that there are two different shi'urim. That the shear of chametz is not like the shear of sa'ar. Bekizayis, sa'ar bekizayis, a sa'ar, which means Rabbi Osai, remember, chametz has the ability to make something else chametz, is asa bekizayis, the chametz bekoseves, and chametz is asa in the shear of a date. So the Gemara says, well, and I remember, again, why are we bringing this up? Because Rav Zvid came along and said what? Rav Zvid came along and said that a koseves is less than a kebetza. Is less than an exam. So says the Gemara, v'sakadaitcha koseves hagasa sha'amru yeser mikabeitza. And if you think that the koseves, if you think that a koseves, a date, is larger than a kebetza, michti, I'm sorry, koseves hagasa, thank you, v'sakadaitcha koseves hagasa sha'amru yeser mikabeitza, if you want to say that the large date that we mentioned is larger than a kebetza, michti, Beishamai ashiura dinafish mikizayis kamahadri. Now, also remember, what is Beishamai looking for? Here's Beis Shammai has a problem. Well, not a problem, but they feel that the Torah has created a problem. What's the problem? Torah could have just said chametz, and if it would have just said chametz, I would have assumed the shear for a chametz is what? Is it kizayis? And if it's kizayis for for chametz, then it's certainly what? A kizayis for sa'ar. But the Torah doesn't do that. The Torah states both prohibitions, therefore telling us two different shiurim. So now, here's what Beis Shammai is stuck with. The shear for sa'ar will be a kizayis, but here's what I know, says Beis Shammai, that the shear for chametz has to be something more than a kizayis. So what are we looking for? We're looking for simply the next shear up. So says the Gemara, if you think that kosev sagasa is larger than a kibetza, michti, let's see, Beis Shammai ashur dinavish mekizayis kamahadri. All Beis Shammai is looking for is what? Is a shear that is larger than a kizayis. Listni kibetza. Then let Beis Shammai say that the shear for chametz is what? The shear for chametz is this. Because what is Beis Shammai looking for? Beis Shammai is looking for the next shear up from kizayis. So if you want to say that, I'm sorry. This Gemara is very emotional. See if you want to say, I'm fine. I'm here. It's fine. If you want to say that kosev sagaso is larger than kibetza. Thank you. Then what should Beis Shammai have said? Beis Shammai should have said that the shear for chametz is kibetza. However, again, what do they say? They say that the shear is koseves gasa, is koseves. So what does that show you? That shows you that koseves is smaller than a beitza, which seems to back up Rav Zavid's assertion that indeed koseves is less than a kibetza. So the Gemara says v'inami, and even if you want to say, I got my coughing fit in the middle of that, so I want to make sure everybody's clear on that. So remember, here's what we have. Beis Shammai has two shiurim, one for chametz, one for sa'ar. The reason he has that is because the Torah states the two prohibitions separately. Sa'ar is going to be a kizayis, and therefore, again, because they're stated separately, chametz must be a larger shear. All Beis Shammai is looking for is for the next shear up from kizayis. What does Beis Shammai say? What's the shear for chametz? The shear is koseves, is the size of a date. Rav Zavid says like this: if it's true that a beitza is less than a koseves, or stated as he stated that koseves gasa is larger than a kibetza, then in reality Beis Shammai should have said that the shear for chametz would have been beitza, because that was the next shear up. The fact that Beis Shammai says that the shear for chametz is like a koseves indicates that what? That koseves is the next shear up from kizayis, which indicates what? That it's smaller than beitza. So the Gemara says, inami, and even if you want to say ki adadi ninu, even if you want to say that perhaps, maybe you could posit, that maybe koseves and beitza are the same. Maybe it's the same shear, even if so, nisni ke beitza. Beis Shammai still should have said beitza. Why? Because beitza is the more commonly used shear. Because we'll say the shear of beitza is used elsewhere within halacha as a shear. So even if you want to tell me that they're exactly the same, you still should have used beitza. So the point of both that comes out of this is what? Elalav shmamina koseves pechutza mika beitza. Rather, see from here what? That lamaisa, again, koseves, the size of a date, is less than the shear of a beitza. So we'll say in Rav Zavid's model, the shear spectrum goes like this. It has, again, on one end, the small shear is kizayis, the larger shear is beitza, and somewhere in the middle over there is koseves, is the size of the date. So the Gemara says the following, Mimai, now one sec, maybe not. Dilma, li olam emelecha, koseves hagasa, sha'omru yisera mikabeitza, hastama kibeitza. The Rabbi said, remember, the Gemara is just picking up over here something very important. Beis Shammai, when he says, talking about the shear of chametz, what word does he use? Koseves. He uses the word date. But yet, the Mishnah by Yom Kippur says what? Koseves hagasa, a large date. So maybe elachinami, maybe a regular date. And by the way, a regular date might even be pitted, right? A regular date might even be. So maybe a regular date is less than a kibetza, but a koseves hagasa, a large date, maybe that's bigger than the beitza. The inami, and even if you want to say ki adodininu, that they are the same shear, the chada minaihu nokit, and the brisa only mentioned, or Beishami only mentioned one of them. Meaning, so maybe you'll say that koseves chagasas, maybe the same size as kebeitza, but ultimately again Beishami just mentioned one of them. Elamihacha, but let's analyze this from here. Ad kam zamin. So, also remember, we're still struggling to find out if Rav Zavid's statement is true or not. So, the Gemara brings now another case. So, also we are now leaving Chametz. Remember, we're covering a lot today. We've gone from Sukkah, right, to Pesach. We need a little Shavuos, and we'll be fine. But we're not going to have any Shavuos today. So, now we're going to Brachas. So, Gemara says, ad kama mezamin. How much do you have to eat to be part of a mezumen? To be part of a mezumen. Ad kama mezamin. So, the Gemara says, ad kizayis to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, Rabbi Meir, what this means is how much bread do you have to eat in order to be part of the mezumen? So Meir says you have to eat at least a kizayis of bread. At least, leaving aside if you can be part of a kizayis with other grain based on it, it's not talking about that now. But for bread, how much bread do you have to eat? You have to eat a kizayis of bread. These are the words of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Hudomer ad kebeitza. And Rabbi Huda says, no, you have to eat a kebeitza. You have to eat an X volume. But Maikam, Ifligi, what are they arguing about? Rabbi Meir sub, Rabbi Meir holds, biachalta. Zuachi d'Rabosai. Remember, here's what's interesting. The pasuk, of course, for Bir Kasamazon is V'achalta v'savato v'irachto. You shall eat, you shall be sated, and ultimately, then you shall bless, you shall bench. So the Gemara dashes the following. The Gemara says, Rabbi Meir Savar V'achalta zuachila. Achalta means achila, means you should eat. V'savato, what does it mean? You shall be sated, you shall be satiated. Zushtia. That refers to drinking. I will say, what does that mean? Rabbi Meir is not suggesting that drinking requires birkas hamazon. What Rabbi Meir is suggesting, however, is that there is a kind of drinking that will require a significant bracha achrona, significant after bracha, and that is what?
Wine.
Wine, right? That wine will ultimately require an al hagefen. So now Rabbi Meir says, achila bikizayis. I will say, here's what's interesting. So according to Rabbi Meir, the Torah just tells me that the obligation to bench comes after I engage in an act of achila. And what is the most basic definition of achila? Kizayis. Okay. Rabbi Huda on the other hand holds. Rabbi Huda Savar. V'achalta v'savata achila. Rabbi will say, Rabbi Huda darshins, then v'achalta v'savata, that is referring to the act of eating. And therefore, what kind of act of eating requires benching? Achila shiyesh basviya. The only time you have to bench is when, Rabbi Osai, when you have an act of eating that ultimately leads one to be sated. So the Gemara says, ve'eza zeh, and how much do you have to eat in order to feel full, in order to feel sated? Zeh kebeitza. That refers to the amount that you have to eat of a kebeitza. So Rabbi Osai, the Gemara says the following. So Rabbi Osai, here's what we have. So fundamental machlokas. Rabbi Meir says that the shir you have to eat to be part of the mezumen is a kizayis. And Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Huda holds that the shir you have to eat is a kebeitza. Fundamental machlokas as to how to dash in the pasuk. Rabbi Meir says achila ba'achalta just means regular achila kizayis. Rabbi Huda says no, the pasuk teaches me ba'achalta v'savata. It has to be a food. It has to be an eating that satiates. And what is that? That's a kebeitza. The Gemara is like this. Watch the Mosai. So the Gemara says v'yisag da'itcha kosev v'sagasa sh'amru yisera mikabeitza. Now if you're going to tell me like Rabbi Huda wanted to say that with aleph. That a kosev sagasa, large date, is larger than the size of a beitza. Hashta kebeitza savui maspa. Daita, must be daita lo miyasva. Now, Bossy, here's what's interesting. Remember, going back to Manal for just a moment, why did we say that we needed a larger shear for Yom Kippur, larger than a kizayis? Because remember, again, by Yom Kippur, the phraseology of the prohibition is affliction, which means that you need to eat an amount that would technically remedy affliction, which has to be a more significant amount. So the Gemara says like this. So now, what do we just say over here? If you want to tell me that koseva sagasa is larger than a kebeitza, hashta kebeitza savui masva. Now we just said over here, according to Rabbi Yehuda, what? Now we're saying the same Rabbi Yehuda. Right? According to Rabbi Yehuda, that an egg's amount of bread has the ability to what? Satiate. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, v'achalta v'savata, in order to bench, you have to be satiated. How much do you have to eat to be satiated? So kebeitza. So hashta kebeitza savui masva. Daita lo miasva. Will it not settle one's mind as well? Meaning, so essentially, again, what the Gemara is saying over here is if a kebeitza of bread is enough to satiate, then the assumption is what? Then that would also be enough to go ahead and ease the inui, which would mean, so we'll say now again, so now we have an inherent contradiction, because now what? Now, therefore, it can't be that a koseves gasa is larger than an egg. Because you've already shown that an egg's amount is enough to satiate, and if it's enough to satiate, it has to be enough to remove the affliction from one as well. To say, therefore, that it has to be a kosevitz gossip wouldn't make sense. So the Gemara Sabosa says, therefore, this seems to prove Rav Zavid's assertion that what? That a kosevitz gasa, that the large date is actually less than the shear of kibetza. So therefore, the Gemara says, look how the Gemara ends off, although this is not the end of the discussion. The Gemara says, you're right. Kibetza masba. The size of an egg actually has the ability to satiate. Kikoseves miasva daite. So koseves settles the mind. We'll say now, what's the distinction? What the Gemara now is suggesting is the following. There are two levels. To be satiated means what? I'm not hungry. I'm okay. I might not be full, but I'm not hungry. For Yom Kippur, there's a different shear. It's less than the amount that needs to be full. I will say, we know this, you know, sometimes if a person is feeling afflicted because they haven't eaten something or drunk something, they don't need to sit down for a meal. What do they need?
Take the edge off.
Just a little bit to know that I have something. So the Gemara is suggesting that that is less. So the shear for Achalta, the Sabata, Sviya, that literally means that I feel full. The hunger pains are not there anymore. That's the shear of a kibetza. For Yom Kippur, there's a smaller shear, and that's called Koseves Agasa. If I were to eat that amount, then what would happen? Would I be full? Would the hunger pains go away? No. But Mias Vadaita, it settles my mind. So I will say now, based on where we are right now, it would appear, we haven't finished the Sugya yet, but it would appear that we have effectively refuted the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, remember, was the Shita on Amud Aleph that said that the Koseves Gasa is larger than the Kibetza. It would appear that we have refuted that position, which means that we have bolted the position of Rav Zavid. Rav Zavid holds again that what? Lemaisa, again, Koseves Gasa is smaller than the size of the Kibetza. And therefore, on our spectrum of Shi'urim, we would have the following. We'd have the Kizayis on one end, the Kibetza on the other end, and Koseves Gasa in the middle. So why is Koseves Gasa the Shir for Yom Kippur? Because again, what the Gemara seems to be saying is the Shir for Yom Kippur is not just a din in Achila. It's a din in Inui. So because it's a din in affliction, so the Shir therefore is not Beitza. Why? Because the Shir of Beitza is enough to satiate. That's not a din in Yom Kippur. Din in Yom Kippur is the only Chayiv if you eat the amount that would remove Inui. And what's the amount that would remove Inui? The Gemara is suggesting right now the size of a koseves gas, the size of a large date. That amount won't satiate, but that amount perhaps will settle the mind by taking the edge off the hunger pangs of the fast. We should at least have some for sale or something. We'll discuss again. We're not finished with this yet. But obviously, we'll end up the sugya with the halacha lamaisa of the measurements as well. But we'll stop over here for today.
When you talk about the bride...
You know, the internet shut off. What happened? What happened when... You? No, is that really... See, did you do something to turn it back on or just went on by itself?
No, you can't. I know. No, it was in the whole store.